Hello, everyone, and welcome to JBFC Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Jupin, and this week I'm joined by Milestone Films' Dennis Doros. Dennis, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me here.
So, Dennis, on September 19th, we are opening a series here that your company is basically 100% responsible for. It's a series called Shirley Clark, No Boundaries, the opening night being her film Portrait of Jason. So we'll get to Shirley and Project Shirley in a minute, but it's not every day I can sit down with a film restorationist slash, you know, film distributor. So I just wanted to get into a little bit of some other things before we start chatting about Shirley. First, I was wondering if you could, for the uninitiated listening here today, just explain a little bit about Milestone and, you know, the mission that you guys have there.
Well, Milestone was founded in 1990. I had met Amy Heller, who was working at New Yorker Films, and we fell in love and got married and decided that we should start our own company. By then, I had started acquiring some films to restore by myself based on Kevin Brownlow's. He's probably the godfather film archivist. He had written a book called The War of the West and the Wilderness, and I started acquiring some of the films from the wilderness section of his book, Marion C. Cooper and Ernest B. Shedsack's Chang, their film Grass. These are the guys who went on to make King Kong. These are earlier silent films they had done. Mm-hmm. And so Milestone was really founded on the principle of distributing films that we loved and wanted to share with our friends.
Now, the genesis, I guess, of the restoration process, how do you go about selecting something? You know, is this project going to be worthwhile? I mean, you said it's stuff you like. So is that generally how you guys have always approached it? Or do people come to you like, you know, I've got some elements of this film. We feel it's really important. Do you also feel it's really important? How does that work?
Yeah, there's so many different ways. We have over 200 films in our catalog now. And each one has a different story. Sometimes I'll wake up in the morning and say, let's do this. Or Amy will at dinner turn to me and say, how about if we do this film? And we'll say, let's go to it. Sometimes I'm at a festival of restoration in Bologna or Pordenone, and archivists sidle up to me and say, I've got an amazing film you have to see. And usually I agree with them because they love film too. It really has to be films we love. A lot of the times when we're working on films, we're seeing them over 100 times over the course of a year, and so you really better love the film.
Yeah, right. So what would you say are some of the most challenging parts when, you know, when you have, like, there's going to be a really hefty workload for a restoration, you know, for folks who are, you know, again, uninitiated in the restoration process? What are some of the more challenging things that goes into from when you guys start to the point where we're showing stuff on the screen here at the Burns?
Again, each film is different because right. How I describe it, I teach sometimes or lecture to archival students. And what it is that based on 30 years of experience, you know pretty much what's going to go into a restoration. But with each and every restoration, there is at one point where you are completely stuck saying, how the hell is this going to get done?
Right.
And you have to think it through. You have to work it through. Some of it is finding the original materials. That's sometimes the hardest part of all. Restoration, especially with digital these days, can be not easy, but a lot easier than it was when I started off with Eric von Stroheim's Queen Kelly in 1984, I think I started.
Oh, wow.
My first restoration. Back then, it would take me a year to edit, and Portrait of Jason took the computer 16 hours to edit, what would have taken me a year to do.
Wow. That's pretty incredible, the technological advancements, you know, in this field. It just must be, you know, having such a weight lifted.
Well,
yes and no.
Yes and no, because the cutting together film, playing with film, editing film is really a sensual experience. I have to say it's mm-hmm. textural, that you fall in love with the film itself, the film stock, the smells, the way it's done, cutting things together and making it look beautiful can be really exciting. And even if you're working until 2 o'clock in the morning, like I was doing, and on weekends, this was after work, and on my off time, I was restoring these films for the company I was working with. It was a lot of fun. There was something that you could sit and ponder and think and do, and it was a physical work, where digital has taken the romance out of it.
Mm-hmm. So I was a cinema studies major at Purchase College just down the road here in Westchester. And, you know, I did a semester studying American independent cinema and the sort of tracing the line from basically the 40s up into present day. And one of the people that we did speak on and screen a few of her films was Shirley Clarke. So we have this series coming here to the Burns with some of the restorations you guys have done at Milestone. So how did you come across Shirley's films? How did Project Shirley, which is the name you've given to the restoration series, how did that all get underway?
The original title was Project Shirley You Jest, because there was so much involved with it, and it still remains a jesting nature on me. Shirley has continued to taunt me after 5 years of work. We are a woman-owned company. My wife, Amy, is the president and majority owner of Milestone, and we've always been interested in the films about and by women. We have Jane Campion's first feature film she did, Two Friends, which is wonderful. And this really was one day I just turned to Amy and said, how about Shirley Clarke? And Amy had distributed Portrait of Jason and The Connection at New Yorker Films 30 years ago. And, you know, we had seen the films, but we really hadn't thought of them. But it seemed like a great idea at the time that there was this woman director. Milestone has always been not about restoring the films of the Michael Powell, the Red Shoes, things like that, which right. we love and adore.
Yeah.
But we have always acquired films that have been lost to history, that have been forgotten by archivists. And Shirley Clarke really had been forgotten. There's over 100 books on Stan Brakhage, over 100 books on Cassavetes. There is zero books on Shirley Clarke. Mm-hmm. She has been completely put aside by historians and critics. And this is really what we found exciting. And then as we watched the films again, we realized, oh my God, what a genius. I mean, she was a brilliant director, especially a brilliant editor. She was probably the best in her field. And she was way ahead of her time. Her films, even today, are still so edgy that they can be upsetting. One of my favorite stories is we premiered Portrait of Jason in Los Angeles at the Academy of Motion Pictures, Arts and Sciences, and Elvis Mitchell, the critic and programmer, was in the film and at the film, and he said he had to move from the third row to the back row because it was too intense. That Portrait of Jason is such an experience, an intense one, that he had to move back. And I really think that's exactly the kind of reaction Shirley loved to get from her audience.
And she certainly dealt with some not quite covered in mainstream cinema topics. Portrait of Jason, you know, homosexuality, in The Connection with drug addicts. Now, The Connection was the one that was, it got a really harsh reaction because of the portrayal of drug use. Am I remembering that right?
It was a film that it had started off as a play by Jack Gelber on mm-hmm. off Broadway, Living Theater's second play that they had ever done. And it dealt with 6-7 men waiting for their drug connection to arrive in an apartment. A lot of them were jazz musicians, and this allowed them to hire some of the great jazz musicians of the time. Jackie McLean and Freddie Redd were both in the original off-Broadway cast and in the film. And there's incredible music. Shirley Clarke grew up loving jazz, and she had this amazing soundtrack for The Connection, one of the best scores in history. But it is about all these men waiting for the drug connection and getting high during the play, supposedly getting high. Everybody thought it was real. Mm-hmm. And during the movie, and in fact, when it opened in 1962, it had actually been banned by the New York board. And the opening night or the next night, I can't remember now, was raided by the police and the theater was closed. And
wow.
It remained a court battle for a year and a half. And by the time they finally won the court case, the excitement over the film, all the hype that had started with Cannes a year and a half, 2 years ago, was gone. And the film just never succeeded as it should have.
Now, the third film we have in the series, speaking of jazz, is a film on Ornette Coleman. I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit. You know, how music sort of filters throughout all of her films. And, you know, this is specifically more of a music film than some of the other things.
It's important to know that Shirley Clarke was a dancer growing up, that mm-hmm. she actually probably was dyslexic, a terrible student, had a very hard time in school. And by the time she hit high school, she discovered dance and she blossomed and she became... we're not sure how great a dancer she was, but it evolved into this great filmmaker, the timing, the choreography, everything else. She knew music. She knew dance. She knew editing. And she realized what a great genius Ornette Coleman was. In the late 60s, Ornette Coleman started using his son, DiNardo, as his drummer, which nepotism is, you know, part of every life, but DiNardo was 8 years old. Okay. And so DiNardo as a drummer for the great Ornette Coleman at the age of 8 was a real story. At least Shirley Clark did, and she started filming this. And she spent about a year and a half, 2 years with Ornette filming, but it never really came to anything. She was having troubles at that time. But in 1983, Fort Worth was opening a big art center, and they decided, let's bring in Native son Ornette Coleman for a big event, and let's make a film of it. And that's when the producer, Kathleen Gray, heard about Shirley Clark doing this previous film and hired her to complete her film and to make this new one about the opening of the Caravan of Dreams in Fort Worth. And Shirley took Ornette's music, which is free jazz, and she didn't make Shirley Clark films. She made films about the subject matter. They were never signatures. They were never. This is one of the reasons why she's so hard to categorize. She got within the subject matter of the film and made the films about the subjects rather than about herself. And she used free jazz editing, which didn't exist before or since, and created this amazing kaleidoscopic film of this brilliant kaleidoscopic man.
So the final film in the retro that we're doing, it's interesting that you brought up, you know, she didn't make Shirley Clark films. She made films, you know, about certain subjects, which made me think, you know, do you know how it was she came to do the Robert Frost film? Because it seems so far removed, you know, you could sort of see connections between the other three films we're doing in this series here and there. But, you know, Robert Frost.
Well, actually, there is a connection there. Uh-huh. In 1963, you have to realize that she had been a short filmmaker in the 50s, and right. She had worked with D.A. Pennybaker and Willard Van Dyke. And so the 1960 film she got an Academy nomination for, Skyscraper, was a paid-for commercial film, a brilliant one about the 666 Fifth Avenue right around the corner from MoMA. It was a beautiful art film, at the same time a commercial for the new building and for America building up into skyscrapers.
Right.
And so hiring her to do Robert Frost wasn't that much of a stretch. And Robert Frost, it was the year before he died. He was an older man by then, but he was a son of a San Francisco bartender, and he was an imp. He was a troublemaker, as was Shirley Clark. Shirley Clark's major influence in life was Felix the Cat and Betty Boop. And really, she dressed like Felix the Cat and sometimes like Betty Boop, but more like Felix. Black hat, black and white, everything. She loved this. And Robert Frost was a kindred spirit, a brilliant man too, a brilliant poet. And I think they really liked each other. I think they had that common goal in life, not to upset people, but make people think, to rock the boat a little.
It just stir things up a little bit.
Yes.
So we were talking about the restoration processes and the challenges you face in different projects and stuff. So what would you say were some of the roadblocks or, you know, maybe speed bumps that you ran into while working on Project Shirley specifically?
The connection was easy because Ross Lippman and UCLA had already restored the film. So I really didn't do much, not even in the digital phase when we converted it to 2K. Robert Frost was easy again because Ross and UCLA had done that. Ornette was difficult because there was way too much material. The producers had kept everything, and to find which was the master materials and which were the master soundtracks and which to use took a few months of heavy labor, mostly by Kathleen and Ross. But getting the colors right, getting everything right, we brought in Ed Lockman, who was the original 16mm cameraman, Super 16 cameraman for the Fort Worth sections. And between him, Ross, and I, it was a collaboration of getting the colors of the seats in the orchestra and colors in the seat in the house correct, getting these things correct. There was a lot of work to get the colors of this film, which are kaleidoscopic as well, correct. Portrait of Jason was, I don't want to curse here, but that was really the difficult one.
Right, that was the big one. So what were some of the issues with that?
Well, when we had acquired the rights from Wendy Clark, the daughter of Shirley Clark, Shirley had died in 1997 from Alzheimer's, we had assumed that we were going to use the Museum of Modern Art restoration that was done in 2002. Everything was going to be easy. They set up a deal for us. It was going to be extremely expensive, but we were going to do the restoration. There was a DVD of this restoration put out in England by Second Run, and we saw the DVD. And that's when we realized that something was wrong. It was very choppy. There was sound missing. There was sections missing. About 4 minutes of film was missing from the film. And the sound wasn't good. And that's when we went back to Moment, said, okay, what was the basis for the restoration? And they said that they had been given a original print from Shirley Clarke. It had gone through theatrical run. It had shown over the course of 30 years at MoMA. It was pretty battered. Mm-hmm. But they thought, and this was a good thing, that this was the last surviving 35 millimeter print in the world, and that they better preserve it before it vanished completely. So what they did was correct, but it just, for the expense of bringing it out, it just didn't look good. So I figured that we're going to find the master material. Nobody else has found it. We're going to do it. And it's going to take 2 weeks or so. It's going to be easy.
And how long did it actually take?
It took 3 years. every week, every month, I kept thinking it's right around the corner. The next lead is going to lead to the finding of the materials. Everything's going to be easy.
Right.
And week after week and lead after lead. And over the course of 3 years, it became an obsession for us. We had to find it. We couldn't go back. And we had gone to Wisconsin Center for Film and Theater Research, which had all of the Shirley Clarke collections, and they had what was called the outtakes. And we had seen the report on it. We had been talking to them. They had checking it and its outtakes. The thing about Portrait of Jason is Shirley Clarke wanted a film that reflected cinema verite, that looked like cinema verite. In fact, to its ultimate form, that it looks completely untouched by editors, completely raw. And there is black leader, there is broken sound, there's everything else. What was considered outtakes at the Wisconsin Center for Film and Theater Research, and they didn't have the soundtrack to go with it, so you can't really blame them either. That turned out to be the first cut of the fine grain that she had done in June 67. She had done 3 more months of cutting after that. And so it took us a year of thinking this might be the right material, might be the right material. It was only after the computer, the day after technically the film was restored, did we realize we did have the complete film. And the computer took what was a first cut and re-edited into the final version in 16 hours, which is pretty amazing.
So that's like, you know, you guys crossing this finish line that you've been racing towards for so long. It's got to be such a great feeling when you realize, like, we finally have it all.
It was such a major relief because I was saying that we have, you know, I was going around the country doing lectures about the search for these materials. It started off at the George Eastman House in a class. And so people start bringing me out, telling about this mad, crazy hunt for materials. And I'm ending the thing thinking, we don't know where the master materials are. And then halfway through the lecture period, well, I think we might have it. And by the time we get to the point where we have spent all this money to digitize the fine grain and edit it back together and to find out that it is complete, it was a major relief.
I can imagine. So, you know, you did mention she has some more films. So I guess you've rolled out these films and we're screening them all here at the Burns. Is Project Shirley finished? Are you guys doing more movies? Are you moving on to something else?
We are moving on to a whole many other films, but Project Shirley continues and will continue for at least 2 or 3 more years. She left behind a huge body of short films that we're working on now, unfinished films that are incredible. Some incredible finds are being on there that nobody had ever seen really before and put in proper context. Her home movies and Kodoscope, she was a dancer. She was getting older. She had a daughter by then. And somebody had given her a Bolex camera as a wedding gift. And so we have all these home movies starting with her wedding in 1943, all the way up to the time she became a filmmaker finally in 1953. So we are going through all these things and finding out her history. And she had amazing friends, dancers, writers, poets. They come across in these home movies. We are finding projects that she never finished that includes the incredible choreographer, dancer, Anna Sokolow, who appears in her short film, Bullfight. We're just finding out so much material, so much sound material. We found the recording sessions for the Connection soundtrack where Jackie McLean and Freddie Redd are talking and redoing things. You can tell by just the way I'm talking.
Yeah.
I'm still remained obsessed by Shirley Clarke's history, by her work. And there is going to be a 3 volumes of The Connection, Ornette, and Portrait of Jason with all the bonus features. There's going to be a 4th volume of just all the ephemera that we've found because mm-hmm. we find it exciting.
You guys are truly doing the cinema gods' work. It's painstaking, but you know somebody's got to do it. Somebody should be doing it. You know, like you said, there's all these books on Brackage and all these books on Cassavetes, but it's a damn shame that you know all these filmmakers fall through the cracks. And you guys are there to catch them before it's too late.
Yeah, it's one of those things that when we go to our film friends and say, "What are you doing next?" and I'm sure we'll get to that. And there's a bewildered look after we say, "This is what we're doing next," because nobody's ever heard of the films that we're starting with.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I think Killer of Sheep was the only one anybody had ever heard of before, and nobody had seen it before we started.
Right.
But yeah, it's sort of what we want to do, and it's sort of the degree of difficulty makes it exciting for us. Mm-hmm. Bringing out a pristine new film is wonderful and exciting, and we've worked with Koreeda on Mabaroshi, his first film. We worked on Takeshi Kitano's first film released in the United States, the first Bangladeshi film. And that's exciting, but bringing out classic films that nobody had ever seen before, had forgotten about, is sort of what we get excited about these days.
So what are you getting excited about next? What are some of the things you guys are rolling out at Milestone?
Well, this morning we just looked at In the Land of the Headhunters by mm-hmm. Edward S. Curtis, the 100th anniversary of this film he made, the great American Indian photographer. And it was one of the very first early feature films with one of the first extant silent scores composed directly for that film in 1914. We're doing the films of Kathleen Collins, who actually is a Westchester native. Mm-hmm. She was an African-American professor, playwright, a very well-known playwright who did 2 films before she died at the very young age of 47. We're doing film by Samuel Beckett, which is only a 22.5-minute film. It stars Buster Keaton, but it also is the only film that Samuel Beckett ever wrote for film. Mm-hmm. And we have found one of the few recordings of his voice, and it's talking about the making of this film before they shot it.
Oh, wow.
In 1964. So Ross Lippman and Milestone's making a documentary about the making of film.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I mean, the list is going on and on. We have right. so many things going.
So for folks who want to catch up and keep up with what you guys are doing at Milestone, how can people find you on the internet?
We are at milestonefilms.com. Mm-hmm. We have a Facebook page for Milestone Films, which is probably the best way to find out what we're doing because mm-hmm. sometimes I get so excited I have to put little clips of film and notes
yeah.
about what we're doing next.
Okay. Dennis, thanks so much for popping on. And again, September 19th, you and Amy will be here presenting Portrait of Jason. It's the opening night of Shirley Clarke, No Boundaries. Thanks for sitting down today.
Thanks for having me, Andrew.
And that's going to do it for this episode of JBFC Podcast. Thanks again for listening. If you want more information about the show, please check out podcast.burnsfilmcenter.org. You can also email me at podcast@burnsfilmcenter.org. You can also follow The Burns on Twitter. We are at JBFC_NY. And you can get at me on Twitter. Also, I am at Jupin. That's at JUPIN. And once again, that's September 19th. Shirley Clarke, No Boundaries opens. It is a phenomenal retrospective. These films are really, really incredible, as I'm sure you were able to glean from Dennis's descriptions. Again, for ticketing information about the series, you can check out our website, www.burnsfilmcenter.org. Until next time, I'm Andrew Jupin, and you've been listening to JBFC Podcast.